Red Bull Racing have officially won more races in a row than any other, more Formula One races in a row, I should say, than any other team in the sport's history as of this weekend, and they don't look like stopping anytime soon after Max Verstappen cruised away from the front of the field for an over half a minute victory from second place Lando Norris in Budapest on Sunday, while teammate Checo Perez looked more like himself over the weekend, This is the Formula Fun Podcast. I'm here to discuss mostly the 2023 Hungarian Grand Prix with me, Matt. Is my lovely wife, Caitlin. Caitlin?
Hey.
How's it going? How did you feel about the 2023 Hungarian Grand Prix? Oh, no, it was too quiet. That was perfect timing and everything.
Was it? You, like, asked me a question, then you're
going to
do your
yamming. Well, you know, it was going to be like we talk and then the music fades out and then we...
There it is.
It's an evolution, you know, the show.
We're all becoming...
We are becoming. Nothing exists. So there's... Yeah, anyway.
What was the question?
Just how did you feel about the race?
Oh, I thought it was...
Was it super boring?
No, it wasn't. I didn't think so. I don't know if I'd call it thrilling, but I was interested in it. I thought it was cool because, like, McLaren's at the front.
We like McLaren.
And, yeah, and it's just, like, something new.
What was new about it?
McLaren.
Oh, the McLaren part. The McLaren bit. Yeah.
They're in the mix, and that was fun.
Yeah, that's fun. I'm enjoying that.
Mm-hmm.
As a McLaren fan,
and you know, Hamilton, and I don't know, it was a little bit mixed up.
Yeah, Hamilton on pole was different.
Yeah,
I think the last person who was on pole besides Max was Charles in
like 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like forever ago. Yeah, that's an interesting place to start. We can start there with quali.
Okay,
talk about Nico Rosberg, remember him? The last person to, well, not the last person to best Lewis, but the last teammate to best Lewis, mm-hmm. I should say, in Mercedes in 2016-17 or whatever that was, said that Lewis's quali lap was art.
Right. And yeah, I was like, says the guy that beat Lewis.
Yeah, exactly.
He's pulling Lewis.
Same.
Yeah.
He's very Lewis-like.
Yeah, you gotta build up your opponent.
Siri interrupted our show.
What was that?
Siri.
Wait, from where?
Over there, my phone sitting. I knew I shouldn't have left my phone in here.
Oh yeah, I turned Siri off.
I don't do that. Yeah, well, hopefully that doesn't happen again. That's annoying. So yeah, Nico Rosberg would say something like that.
Yeah,
basically.
Like you build up your opponents so that their inevitable defeat is all the more glorious.
Whatever.
I mean, he's like retired now, so.
Yeah, I don't think many people like him very much.
Nico Rosberg. My impression is that they don't.
Yeah, he's kind of, I don't know how to put it.
Yeah, I actually don't really know anything about him. His voice is a little bit annoying.
His voice is kind of annoying. That sums it up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
people are like, I just don't like his. I just don't know. I just
there's
don't.
There's something about him.
Right.
There's just something about him.
Yeah.
He's one of those people.
Yeah.
He's super rich. He lives in Monaco. He just has like a YouTube channel about
Formula
how Wonder. Rich in Monaco he
oh,
is.
Oh, really?
Well, kind of. He like drives fast cars on a YouTube channel and talks about it.
Well, I mean, if you have a problem with that, then.
Yeah. I love that. I'm all
about
that.
Oh, you do?
Well, I don't know. It depends on the flavor of the show, but we digress. So, George Russell, however, in qualifying got kind of screwed. Remember, he ended up 18th
because of the tires.
Well,
stuff,
not really.
Or he just did a bad job.
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay,
I'll just be totally clear.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, we don't really know. That's the theme of the show. But I do know that Mercedes kind of took a gamble with their qualifying strategy. And had to go out late in Q1 to even get their like banker lap in. And so George went out in traffic and couldn't get his final lap in. And so was 18th.
Did he get a track time deleted? A lap deleted?
Good question.
There was a lot of track limit deletions.
It's been happening a lot this year.
Yeah, but they were like, it's not going to happen in Hungary because you.
Yeah, you're on the grass and it's protected by natural track limits and stuff.
Right, right. But then, I don't know. I was like, they were finding plenty of.
Yeah, apparently they're just policing it more strictly this year.
Yeah. I mean, it makes quality. I don't know. I don't. I'm not like mad about it or anything. It kind of adds another like element of chaos to qualifying, which is kind of fun. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
it's maybe not fun because it's not like pure racing, whatever. But
I have very mixed feelings about it because like the competitor in me is super like gut wrenching, annoyed by it. Like I feel like I'm far cry from being like in Lando Norris's shoes, but if I was like P2 in a session and then had my time deleted and was suddenly like P13 and had to go out there and do it all over again, I would be so annoyed.
Yeah, like maybe they should make the sessions longer.
But you gotta just stay within the track, you know, keep it in the
apparently that's hard to do.
Yeah, well, racing cars is hard, you know. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
So there's that. That's the mixed feelings part of it, is that my rule follower side of my brain is like, hey, it's the rules, you know, stay within the limits. Stop taking a piss is what George Russell said. He was, you know.
George Russell said that?
Yeah.
About the track limits?
Yeah. He said the drivers should stop taking a piss.
I thought that meant like making fun of.
Just having like having not taking it seriously.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Like if they should if they're saying we can't keep it in the road, we can't keep it in the track limits, they're taking a piss. They're not being honest.
I see.
Yeah, that's my interpretation of it, I guess.
Right. Right.
So someone who did keep it in the track limits. There's my segue. Max Verstappen was second to Lewis.
Yes.
He was not able to take pole, but this is kind of the cool thing about it. I found that this was also kind of ice cold about Red Bull, was that they just set up their car kind of differently this weekend because they know they're so fast on Sundays and the Hungaroring is really, really hard on rear tires. This is getting kind of nerdy and technical, but I'll keep it short and sweet. So the Hungaroring, especially because it's so warm there, it gets to be like 50 degrees centigrade.
Oh wow.
On the track.
Really?
That's
warm.
Really hot, right?
Yeah.
So that's like way over 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes, right? I'm familiar with
the conversion rate.
Well, I mean vaguely.
Yeah, 50, like 40 is like 100, right?
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, so it's really, really hot. Like, so the track itself is super, super hot.
And
so
they're sitting like an inch above the track.
Yeah, their booties are probably warm.
Warm.
Yeah, warm alert. So the tires get super, super hot, especially because they're spinning and putting a lot of force through them, right? So especially the rear tires at the Hungaroring.
Okay.
So once you lock in your setup for Saturday, you're stuck for Sunday. So it's not ideal to set up for one lap to go really, really fast, because then your car is kind of poo-pooed to go for 70 freaking laps.
Right. It was a lot of laps.
Right. So you would rather set up your car to go for 70 laps, but that then it's slower over one lap.
Right. Does especially if you're Red Bull and you're like, we're pretty comfortable.
Yeah, we're fine. We can start second and still win.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what they did. So they didn't really worry about qualifying because Max will just qualify second and still win. So they set up their car to be a little bit more understeery.
Okay.
So that it would be safer on the rear tires. Just take care of them rear tires.
Okay.
Keep them cool, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them cool. We don't qualify on pole. That's all right. Let Lewis talk about how artful his lap is. You know, let Lewis do his little thing, right? Lewis can qualify on pole. We're fine. We're still going to finish a minute ahead of everybody
or whatever it was. It was substantial.
Yeah. And so by turn one, they were just in first place and then they just drove away. So I thought that was kind of cool because they sacrificed their one lap pace to be faster over 70 laps, which is all part of the strategy, you know?
Yeah, and they got that little record feather in their cap.
Got their little record. Big record. Not a little record, even. So, Mercedes, on the other hand, did the opposite. And they sacrificed all their 70-lap pace for one lap. And so they like opened up all the air ducts on their cars and like let all the air rush through their car, which makes it really warm and makes it really fast over one lap. But
their tires were just like splattering,
melting
out into the.
Okay, so that's enough about qualifying.
Okay.
I thought we'd go through the race kind of team by team, keep it short and sweet.
Sure, sure, sure.
But like based on how well the teams did. So okay. Average like teammate finishing, that'll be what team we talk about.
Okay.
So obviously Red Bull will be first because Max won. Checo got, let me double check.
Yeah, he did all right.
Checo got third. So the story of Red Bull is obviously Max drives away from the front and finishes 34 seconds.
Oh boy, I know. That's
ahead of everyone.
I mean, I don't know much, but I know that that's a really big gap.
That's really good.
For a car.
It's about as far. That's over a pit stop ahead of everyone. Right. So you get so far ahead that you can take your own pit stop and still be out in front of everyone.
Yeah, like 25 seconds is a pit stop.
Yeah, exactly. So that's about as safe as you can possibly be. Because that's as safe as you want to be. You wouldn't even want to be farther ahead than that because then you're just burning up the car and making it go faster than it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
So Max did that. Fastest lap to boot, I think.
Yeah, of course.
That was like a second and a half faster than Checo's fastest lap. So there's not much you can say about Max at this point, except that I've heard a little bit of debate about like hemming and hawing about like, oh, you can't really tell how good he is because it's partially the car. Some kind of just,
this I want to be super clear dance.
About how like, I think it's already obvious that Max Verstappen is like Ayrton Senna levels, like best of, I don't know, like who we are to like declare that we're nobody, but like. I just think it's silly.
Get Autosport on the horn.
I know, right? Give him some kind of award, Formula Fun Award. I don't know. I just think it's silly to be like, to him and haw about is he or isn't he at the level of some sort of like genius type great. And again, it doesn't matter if we declare it here on this podcast, but I think it's pretty obvious that he is.
Yeah, you know, of course.
That he can like do things with race cars that other people like physically and like psychologically can't do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with that, but I also don't think it's that different from the conversation that surrounded Lewis and the Mercedes. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, of course they don't drive in a vacuum. Like it matters what car they're in and the team and everything, of course, but it doesn't really, to me, I don't understand how that would take away from what they're achieving.
Right.
Yeah. Max is obviously freakishly good at driving race cars.
Yeah,
once in a generation talent or whatever.
Yeah, so many superlatives you can just label on top of one after the other, and they're all
weirdest looking.
Yeah, that's one of them probably.
I mean,
yeah,
is that right?
Checo, on the other hand, the question of Checo's day was it actually good?
I thought it was, but it wasn't. He started at the back and then he drove fast.
Yeah,
and then he's in the front.
Exactly, which is good in racing, right? Starting at the back and driving to the front. That sounds good. But when you're in Max's car, you should never be in the back.
Oh, whatever. Sure. Yeah, he had a bad quali.
Yeah, you should never start ninth. Max doesn't start ninth. Max doesn't start ninth. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to say.
Max doesn't start ninth.
Yeah.
Nobody puts Max in a corner.
And if he did, he would finish first, not third.
Oh.
Right?
I don't know. There were some competitive cars out there.
That Max would pass.
Well, yeah, easily. But Max doesn't count. I mean, he's
exactly
like that. That's what I'm right. He's his own. He's competing against himself. He's like.
He has a little ghost car that he chases, like in the video games.
He just doesn't even.
But that does make a difference because, you know, if you're in the same car as Max, you're ultimately compared to Max. And then you have to say, did you have a good day when you finished third in the same car as Max and you're a second and a half slower than him over the course of the race and you finish 40 seconds behind him on the road or something like that? Then it's like, well. Yeah, you can pat yourself on the back. He got driver of the day.
I mean,
the fans voted him driver of the day.
Is that like a pity five driver of the day?
I mean, so I don't even know what, I don't even know if they get anything.
But he's
for
like,
that,
yeah, but he was like going through a lot of traffic. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's, nobody's going to be shocked to be like, to hear like, oh, Checo's just not Max Verstappen's level. Like, of course
not.
Not
anymore, of course, yeah.
Yeah, he's just hanging on for dear life. Like,
he literally is at this point
it.
With Ricardo
yeah.
back on the grid.
Yeah.
Okay, enough about Red Bull. So any final thoughts about Checo or Max before we move on to McLaren?
Just best of luck, Checo. Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers, yeah. Lando finished second and Oscar finished fifth. Yeah, the story about Lando and Oscar's race was that they started very high, third and fourth, and then overtook Max. Well, Max
Hammer.
Overtook Lewis, and then they both overtook Lewis
mm-hmm.
at the start. And so they were running second and third.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was actually Oscar and Lando running second and third.
Good first names. That's a solid first name.
Yeah, they're
team.
A great team.
Yeah.
You got to love it. And let me just pause for a second before I get back to the story of the race to say that one other cool thing I like about McLaren, and I liked this with Andreas Seidel, the guy who was here before.
Yes.
So this isn't just like a, not a bandwagon thing. Okay. Not a bandwagon
okay.
McLaren fan. I've been a McLaren fan for a long time. But Andrea Stella, who's got a very similar name, but is very Italian, different
okay.
than Andreas Seidel,
okay.
who is Austrian.
Right.
Who ran the
Very
team
different.
Prior to Andrea Stella. Andrea Seidel came from Porsche.
Okay.
Okay, and built a Porsche WEC car that was a world beater. Came to run McLaren and then left. And I'm not really sure why. I think he's tied to Audi or something, but whatever. We'll leave that aside. Andrea Stella has apparently done this like amazing job with the McLaren team.
Okay.
Restructuring it. Giving people the freedom to express themselves. You just hear like how he's just this awesome leader.
That's always nice.
It's so nice, isn't it? And
yeah.
like everybody just loves working there.
Yeah, you want it to be like a happy place.
Yeah, and people are like, finally.
Like the snack bar
I'm
is
like
really good now.
To. Yeah, and I can like have conversations openly and like my opinion is valued.
You got one of those espresso machines.
It's an open concept.
Yeah,
you know, there's lots of,
oh, everyone
there's
loves
lots of
those.
Natural light. Uh-huh. Yeah. Actually, it is, actually, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, the
it's
facility
supposed to help
is,
with collaboration.
You know, Ron Dennis designed it.
Yeah, maybe
so
they put some plants in there to offset all the gray.
Yeah, exactly. But seriously, and I saw like a couple interviews with him where he's like, I don't want any other credit. It's not a me thing. It's a we thing. All that good stuff that a leader should say, you know, like all the credit goes to like Zach Brown and all this stuff. I couldn't do it myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team sport. And so he's done like this amazing job. Remember the name Andrea Stella because I'm predicting he ends up running Ferrari.
Oh, that'd be great.
Italian guy.
I would love that.
Does a great job at McLaren. Builds the team up to like maybe second on the grid.
Come save
behind.
Ferrari.
Yeah. Well, but Ferrari just eats people alive. That's what would happen to him probably.
Oh.
Anyway, so back to the race. So
yes.
Lando was behind Oscar, but then undercut him
mm-hmm.
where he pits first and then goes really fast on his way in. And then Oscar has to do another lap. And then Lando goes really fast on his way out. And then Oscar wastes time pitting. And then by the time Oscar comes out, he's behind Lando.
Mm-hmm.
And so McLaren defends it by saying Lando's the quicker driver on track, even though he's behind Oscar. And Hamilton was coming up behind both of them, kind of
mm-hmm.
hunting like a
mm-hmm.
shark.
What was that?
It was Australian, like
okay.
a shark. Okay.
Okay.
He was hunting Oscar.
They probably
How
have a cute name for shark.
Sharky.
Sharky.
Yeah.
Oscar.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. It's hard to say that. So they
Oscar.
Were I don't understand strategy of Formula One. Who does? It's a dark art. But it's like,
yeah, well, that's I thought that's what I was gonna say, is that like they probably didn't quite know what was gonna happen.
I think they knew. Oh. They have a pretty good handle on that. But what
well
I think,
isn't that standard though? The person in front pits the person behind pits first?
No, it's not something? Standard. What is standard is the person in front gets preferential strategy treatment.
Okay. So Oscar
got that might mean over. Pitting first. That might mean pitting second. It depends on the track. It depends on the...
Right.
Depends on lots of things. Because on some tracks, undercuts are more powerful. Right. And on some tracks, overcuts are more powerful. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you want to pit first. Sometimes you want to pit second. It just depends on lots of things.
Yes.
So... in this case, a lot of the credit goes to Norris because he drove such balls to the walls in laps and out laps that he made the undercut work by just being really quick.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no guarantee that an undercut will work. So a lot of the credit goes to him. Anyway, but so then there's all the talk of, oh, should they have done that to Oscar? But it panned out that Lando was faster over the course of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar, bless his heart, he's so sweet. He was really fast. It was like a little rookie race, and it was kind of cute because they're really fast together at the beginning of the race.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lando just stayed fast and like stayed at the same pace for the whole race. And Oscar kind of just like, I can't keep up, brother. I can't do it. And kind of got swallowed up by Perez and Hamilton.
He was like, how many more laps?
Exactly. He was like, I'm tired. I've been swimming for so long.
Yeah.
You know, all these hard tires just won't stay warm.
Yeah.
Can I get mediums, please? He really was at one point like, can we go back to the mediums, mate? You know, I can't keep my hard tires warm, mate. And they were like, you need to stay on the hard tires. You need to keep. They really were kind of like, I remember that, man.
Yeah.
So it and then Oscar, they were complimentary of Oscar after the race and said he did a great job, but Oscar was like, not as good as Lando. He gave props to Lando. He's like, Lando showed me how to drive today.
Oh.
Isn't that cute?
That is cute.
I know. Isn't that great?
I love it.
So that's just the difference.
You know, like a little competitive, like you want to, you know, you want to be the best, but you can also like give props. Like that's a great way to be.
Yeah. Lando's in a class of his own and he knows it. He knows where his stake is at McLaren right now, where he's staked.
Where the
stake is staked in the ground.
Ah, yes.
At McLaren. So anyway, that's cool. They got a cool little dynamic going there. And the cool thing, too, is that Oscar didn't complain on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he got undercut, he didn't complain. He didn't complain when Perez kind of like tried to push him off the track.
Oh yeah, he was just, Perez is just desperate.
Even when
like, I'm gonna have to kill this rookie.
Yeah, Perez got his elbows out today too.
He's like, it's worth it.
He's like, I will keep.
I have a family to feed.
They're like, Perez, you can chill a little bit, bro. Like, yeah, they said it was funny. They were like, Oscar, did Perez push you off the track there a little bit? And Oscar's just like, oh, no, I mean, you know, not really.
They're like, Perez is off camera just throat cutting motion.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was a pretty good day for McLaren again.
Yes.
And to wrap things up, their upgrades have worked.
Yeah,
like this seems, is like seems proof, to proof be. Positive.
Right. Because people weren't expecting them to do as well.
That's exactly right. So in Austria, it was like quick track upgrades will probably work. Silverstone, quick track upgrades should work. And they did. And then Hungary, not quite as quick of a track. We don't know, but they were still good.
Awesome. Can't wait to keep
exciting.
See what they do.
Yeah, exactly.
I have one more thing to say about McLaren.
Awesome. Go for it.
Well, Lando, is
make
it
this a McLaren podcast?
Papaya. Broke Max's trophy.
Oh yeah, he did, didn't he? And then he was like, sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, first of all, the Hungary trophy is
awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's the best trophy.
Fantastic.
Silverstone has a good trophy too, because it looks kind of like a Wimbledon style, like, but I don't want to
I don't want to detract.
Let's talk about the
Hungary
trophy.
I mean, we can talk about trophies because I have opinions.
We should do like a trophy show.
Yeah, it just looks like this little vase, like a little grandma
and
it's antique and
delicately
filigreed,
yeah, exactly. I knew you would have a word for that.
But yeah, I guess Lando was celebrating. Sorry, I'm being loud. And he like kicked over Max's.
Yeah, he did. He sure
like,
did. He broke
shattered it.
Yeah, it broke it real bad.
Yeah, it was funny because just all the pictures of Max like up on the podium. He's like holding two pieces. Like,
yeah,
it's like broken.
I saw on the interwebs that it's displayed broken at the Red Bull facility.
Yeah.
Like, where they have like, we won in Singapore, we won in Mexico and all that.
Like,
and then they have,
like,
yeah,
propped
they
up.
Exactly. And I thought that's a little cheeky, like, you know, because I did also read that they're going to replace it for him.
Sure,
know?
I'm
so,
sure, yeah.
Anyway.
But it was great because, yeah, right, Max posted on Insta and was like, thanks, Lando, you know, as a nod to him breaking his trophy. And Lando was like, sorry, not sorry. And then he posted, like, the Wikipedia article about the, like, Japanese art of, like, affixing pottery with like gold to like highlight like flaws are beautiful or whatever. And I was
Katsugi,
like, what a nice little cultural point. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of Formula One drivers probably don't know.
No.
Stuff like
yeah.
that. So anyway, point for Lando.
Yeah, Lando's
great. For just
great.
Like knowing stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Lando's the man. Mercedes is next. They finished fourth, Lewis Hamilton, and sixth. George Russell.
So George made up to what? 10
George
places?
Should have been driver of the day. He went from like 18th to 6th.
Yeah,
and
but
he didn't
George.
Do it in the yeah. Stop taking a piss.
I know. Stop.
The
yeah,
other thing
we
he
gotta
said,
follow the
speaking
rules,
of
guys.
Pisses, the
oh,
other thing he said was that he didn't make it out of Q1 because of a massive cock up. So it's like George. You're just
George, what
all...
are you even saying?
I know. So anyway.
Yeah, I love that. That is actually a great, one of the better Britishisms.
Yeah, a cock up.
Cock up.
Yeah. Because you can just say it.
Yeah, you can just say it there.
And everyone's just like, yeah, that was a cock up, wasn't it?
I was like, yeah. Cocking it up.
Right. Then you're just laughing hysterically and everyone's looking at you all weird, kind of like right now. So anyway, so Lewis made pole. We already talked about that, but then fell behind in the race. Lewis was like, I'm sorry, guys.
I know.
He came on the radio and
literally
was like,
it was the
like,
best
sorry,
I could
guys.
Do. I was doing my very best, hardest.
It was just so hard.
Yeah.
It was just so hard. I couldn't do it.
Right.
Russell had a great recovery drive. Should have been driver of the day probably after a massive cock up in Q1. So that's all about it. The thing about Mercedes is they don't understand their car. That's what you keep hearing.
Okay. Like the team or the drivers?
No, the whole team.
Like everyone's like, what is the deal with this car?
Yeah, yeah. The Diva 2.0.
Or just like poking it with a stick. Like,
yeah, they're afraid of it.
Yeah.
Because it'll be fast one day and then like slow the next day and like different, like they just... You know,
maybe it's got there's like a lizard in it or something.
Yeah, they ran over a cat. There's a cat in the engine. Aww. You know, like because sometimes cars like Ferrari has similar problems where, you know, they'll go out on a setup, and on a set of new soft tires, and then come in, change the tires, and the tires are the only thing they change, and the car behaves differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, they're really complex machines. You'd think they'd all kind of be like that.
Well, but not good ones if they're dialed in, quote unquote, and well balanced, quote unquote, you know, and
that's
so
that's impressive.
Yeah, it's a hard job these people have. So stuff like that, you know. Oh, well, on one stint of hards, the car behaved like this, and then we changed to mediums and we expected it to behave like this, and it just behaved like this instead.
And then it didn't.
Yeah, so it's impressive, makes something like what McLaren's, not to just go back to McLaren for a second, but what they're doing even more impressive because not only are they improving their car, but they clearly have an understanding of their car as a foundation first to be able to improve their car.
Right.
Because you have to understand all the little details of how your car works and intricacies of all the little ins and outs of the way the car interacts with itself and whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, so Ferrari, the next team on the list, who drivers finished 7th, Charles Leclerc, and 8th, Carlos Sainz, have the similar problem to Mercedes. They do not understand their car.
Mm-hmm.
It's unpredictable. But in addition to that, they have their typical Mercedes woes. Like
Ferrari woes.
Or sorry, Ferrari woes. Yeah, I misspoke. For example, Charles Leclerc was in like fifth.
Yes.
And then pitted, and their wheel gun didn't work.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, and so instead of coming out in like fifth place, he came out in like 11th place.
Yeah, I mean, those things happen.
They happen, but they typically, they happen more often to a team like Ferrari. It's like if you averaged things out over the course of infinity.
That's probably right.
You know, it seems like Ferrari would suffer the most from things like that. So that was one bad thing that happened. And then the other thing just on top of that was you hear like... This happened for Sainz and Leclerc. So Sainz and Leclerc ended up kind of sharing the same piece of road for most of the race. And then there was a lot of talk of how they should switch him back and forth, who should be in front of who. And they ended up like switching him twice.
Oh, really?
And it was kind of like they didn't really, one driver was faster than the other driver. And then, oh, shoot, we got to switch him. And then we got to switch him back. And the whole time it was like when Carlos was the faster driver behind, he was like, okay, guys, what are we going to do? And they're like, oh, well, we'll get back to you on that. You know, we're trying to decide. We don't know. And it's like, you got to know.
Just be like, hold position.
Or switch.
Yeah.
You have to, that's like what the whole purpose of having a race strategy is to know in that moment what you're supposed to do in that moment. And Ferrari just doesn't. There was one point where in Charles's radio, and out of deference to the Italian team in this moment, I won't do an impersonation of them because I'm trying to be kind of serious about this. Yeah. It feels kind of wrong. Cause I'm beating them up pretty bad in this case. But Charles was the one trying to get switched ahead of Carlos. And he was like, guys, I need to know what to do or something. And they were like, we'll talk about it later. And Charles just straight up said, like, I need to know now. Like, we're in the middle of a race.
Yeah, what do you mean talk about it later? Exactly. Like, when the race is over?
Exactly. Seriously.
That's would be so frustrating. Yeah. I think both those drivers are probably just so frustrated with Ferrari.
I heard a real interesting kind of juxtaposition to the way the drivers have handled the situation. Because, and it's a kind of a peek behind just their personalities and their roles within the team, because Carlos, who I think feels like a lot less allegiance to Ferrari, just makes the decision himself.
Yeah.
So he comes on the radio and says, guys, I need to know what to do. And they're like, I don't know. We'll get back to you. We're looking into it. And he just says, for example, in Hungary, he just says, okay, if I remember this radio message. He says, if Perez gets past me, I'm going to box.
Yeah.
And he just says, he just decides. Whereas Charles is so much more deferential, to use the same word I just used a second ago. And he appears just overwhelmed by all of it, where he won't make a decision himself. And he'll kind of just go back and forth with the team. I heard one person put it where Charles's race engineer seems like he's kind of the middleman instead of like an authority figure, where like imagine Bono, Mercedes, you know, Bono feels like he's the one making the decisions.
Yeah.
Where he's like, Lewis, this is what you're going to do. And it's like, it's his voice of authority. You don't hear that when you hear Charles's race engineers. We're thinking about it. You know, anyway, so on top of having a bad car, they just feel like they're, I don't know. What else can you say about it? Just running a metaphor I can't think of right now. Leaky ship.
A leaky ship sinks all leaky ships.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, not a great day for Ferrari. Charles also sped in the pit lane. So he got a penalty
for
that.
Yeah, he did. Ooh, can't bad do that. Boy.
Can't do that.
Bad
can't
boy alert.
That would be an easy way to cheat.
Didn't it not matter? Well, actually, maybe it did. Like, he got a 5-second penalty, but I don't remember how it ended up working out, if it mattered for his position.
I don't remember either. Maybe not. He finished 7th anyway, so. Aston Martin is next.
Yeah, they didn't do so well this
They have race. Not been doing well. They have not been doing as well as they started
the season. Oh, well, yeah, definitely. But I thought they were supposed to do well this race.
Yeah, that was kind of some of the talk, because of the track's nature of having more slower to medium slow corners and Aston being good at tracks like Monaco, but they just weren't.
Yeah.
And so now there's that whole discussion of how do you understand your car? Are you making upgrades that aren't working? What direction are you going? Is it a bad direction? Is it something? Yeah, there's so many in the multitude of questions you ask as a Formula One team when something like this happens, right?
Papa Stroll starts yelling.
Papa Stroll is probably the most stressful person to have around in a situation like this.
Yeah.
Things are going wrong. Why? Here, take my money. Take my money. Mike Crack, whose name is Mike Crack. I know.
LOL.
The team boss said he this is the new normal.
Wages suck.
Yeah. Those are the words he used. Alonso at first was kind of like he's changed his tone, which has been interesting to watch because, you know, Alonso and his tone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can be very like kind of like a barometer.
Yeah,
of how things are going in the team. You know,
mercurial.
Yeah. Mercurial is a good word to go along with barometer because like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
see what's happening there.
Right. Yeah. As things get stormy.
Right.
In the team, you know, the mercury rises.
It's less, there's less like, wow, Lance Stroll is
a future world champion, I think. Yeah. Alonso literally said.
Alonso, he is no shame.
I know, seriously. So his tone has changed a little bit, but he's not like outwardly critical of the team yet. He's just kind of like, well, you know, I thought that after the string of podiums kind of ended, he said, well, you know, you can't have podiums every weekend, of course, blah, blah, blah. Then he said, I'm not surprised we don't have any upgrades yet because you can't just like upgrade your car every week. And then he kind of said something like, oh yeah, maybe we should have had more upgrades by now. So, you know, like his tone is just kind of like, you're going, oh, Alonso, you sound a little different.
And his forehead's like popping out a little bit
right,
more.
Right, exactly. So there's that. So yeah, Hungary was a test for, are they going backwards? Or not. And I guess the answer is kind of like, yes, they're going backwards.
They're going backwards. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it is because it was one more team to compete for second place, basically. Yeah,
it's kind of just anything new toward the front.
Yeah. Now we're getting into some of the sadder teams. But speaking of sad teams, Alpine.
Oh, yeah, they had a really bad... Didn't they double DNF?
Double DNF for the second weekend in a row. God. Can you imagine being in the middle of that team?
That's not good.
And apparently I learned recently that, like, the team is the most... This is not very kosher of me, but, like, very dramatic. Let me just put it that way.
Okay.
Like, the CEO of the team, like, went on TV to berate the leadership of the team on like a daytime television show. It's like
healthy.
That kind of, you know, like, can you imagine Toto Wolff doing something like that? Like taking out his,
of course not.
You know, and they're just like heads roll all the time. You know, it's like the opposite of, it's the opposite of what goes
French.
On at McLaren. That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
You know, it's very French. It seems very emotional and dramatic and very like
beheadings.
It's the opposite of a no blame culture. You know what I mean? And so they've got like people in high, very important roles who are like their most important role in Formula One was like the head of COVID response. And now he's like the technical chief of Alpine. And he's only had like 1 year in the sport and stuff. It's like, you're in charge now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know much about like French
bureaucratic
style.
But I think it seems very inefficient.
I don't get that impression.
I don't know, but
I was just specifically talking about like heads rolling and the French Revolution.
Oh yeah.
That's what I was.
Well, it seems like that's kind of what's going on at Alpine, and in the middle is just Otmar
Szafnauer,
who has like 30 years of Formula One experience, and he's just like holding it together like glue desperately, to keep the ship afloat, because he's the only one who has any competence at the team, and then he's going to be the one who takes all the blame when everything goes wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because he's a good guy, and he's good at his job. But apparently the whole team is just like a dumpster fire around him.
Bummer. And
it is a bummer because Renault, which is really the team, has a heritage of like winning world championships in the sport.
When?
In 2005, pretty recently, with Fernando Alonso.
I mean, that's not recent anymore.
I know it's not.
That's
but still.
A long time ago.
But still, so they're a world, they're a huge auto manufacturer.
Yes.
I think they're like technically the largest auto manufacturer in the world.
I believe so.
And they used to have a ton of pride in winning Formula One championships as an engine manufacturer and a constructor. And so now they talk all this talk about how, oh, we want to restore that heritage, but then they just run this operation that is like, what are you guys actually, what are your real intentions? You know, like it's so hard to discern because
they've had some good moments.
I know, but it's like you say you want to be world champions and you want to win in 5 years. Oh, we bump that back another 2 years. So we want to win in 3 years with podiums
well,
in 3 years.
Hard.
But they and have then, so much money. Then they just can't run their team. I don't know. And then they brand it Alpine, which is like Alpine has it's a sports car brand.
Yeah.
They have one car. They make one car.
Okay, so what?
It's like clearly this really like thinly veiled attempt at just marketing a Renault brand that like it's a
like it's a front. It's just
it's a marketing front.
Yeah,
it's a cheesy marketing front.
Well,
anyway, that's my rant about Alpine.
Okay, thanks.
Alfa Romeo's next. Zhou Guan Yu.
They were doing good,
and then they
drove into
bad.
Everyone.
I know.
1 second into the race.
Yeah, Zhou Guan Yu had the worst race in Formula
he was
One
like,
history.
I'm doing it, oh God.
Yeah. So let me break down Zhou Guan Yu's race. It won't take but like a minute because that's about all it lasted. So he qualified fifth, which was good. The best ever. Because the track, it's so funny because remember last week we were joking about how the Alfa Romeo was like really slow.
Slow and steady.
And then you'd be like, well, the Hungaroring will be great for the Alfa Romeo or mm-hmm. something like that. And it actually was.
And it was.
Yeah,
I know.
It's like, you guys don't have to actually go too fast around this track. You can kind of just putter.
Yeah.
You don't need to really give it the welly. So anyway, so yeah, the track just perfectly suited the Alfa Romeo for whatever reason. And Zhou put it on the, what is that, third row, fifth? And, okay, so he just didn't get away at the start. The cars around him just took off, and mm-hmm. he just sat perfectly still. And so that's the beginning of his race. Like, the lights on his steering wheel went out, you know,
mm-hmm.
and nothing happened. And so five red lights go on, five red lights go out, and Zhou Guan Yu just doesn't go. And so he has to basically like restart the car and start from neutral and start it like a road car, like first gear, and then just get like a slow rolling start, not like a race start where mm-hmm. your revs are like way high and you mm-hmm. go and you like drive away like a race start. He just gets like a grandma start,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that's
so like his car messed up?
That's what he says.
Okay.
So there's a lot of like, do we protect the driver or do we blame the driver in this scenario, depending on the outcome?
Right.
And it appears as though Alfa Romeo has taken the tact of we're going to protect the driver in this situation. I think because of how embarrassing what eventually transpired was.
Yeah.
And so they've decided to say there was a clutch issue.
Okay.
But it appears as though he just, and I haven't watched it with my own two eyes. I've only just like heard what other people said. That he kind of just like fumbled the clutch.
Okay.
You know, it's super sensitive, mm-hmm. like hair trigger sensitive.
Sure.
I can't imagine how hard it is to get it right because you have to like hold your foot slightly down on the throttle and hold the clutch slightly open so the revs are at a just right level. Then you like drop the clutch and engage the gear. Anyway, so they said it was a car issue.
Right.
But long story short, he gets going, but it's like a shopping market start, you know, car park start.
I see.
And then he makes the very rookie error. He's not a rookie anymore, but it's a common error. I've made the error in sim racing myself where you make a mistake and then you try to make up for that mistake.
I'm just going to go really fast.
Yeah, oh, I'm just going to brake super late in a turn one here. Oh, God.
You know, I shouldn't have done that.
So it's super common in racing. It's like, well, I guess it's common in all sports, but you just get super emotional, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, oh, that was so bad. And then you like go really hot into the next turn. And yeah, so he slammed into the back of a car, which slammed into the back of a car, which slammed into the back of a car.
Mm-hmm.
And it was completely his fault. And ended both of the, what car was it? Alpine's race?
I guess so.
Remarkably, yeah. The car that he hit, which was Danny Rick, was fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. Skittles, they call it in Britain.
What Skittles?
When you just go into the back of a Constantina of cars like that.
Oh, okay.
Skittles.
Cute.
Yeah. So Joe
skittled it.
Skittled it.
Cocked it up.
Big old cock up. Bottas finished 12th.
Okay.
So there's that.
Anyway.
AlphaTauri, Danny Rick.
Danny Rick, how'd he do?
I don't know. Okay. That's kind of the question. Yeah, no, he was like good.
Yeah. Tsunoda was gone.
Well, the thing is I think what you have to say about Danny Rick is that he checked all the boxes of like, do I need to accomplish this weekend? Yes, I did. I checked that box. I was equal to or better than Tsunoda in mm-hmm. every session of free practice. Check, check, check.
Okay.
I was not physically, the car was not physically too much for me to drive. Check. You know, I lasted all 70 laps.
Exactly.
Especially at Hungaroring, which is a physical track. You know, it's hot. It's a lot of twisty, turny bits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, check. I was instantly up to speed in qualifying, check. You know, mm-hmm. I out-qualified my teammate, check. And I, you know, nearly finished in the points.
Yep.
So what else
pretty
can you
good.
Say?
Yeah.
Pretty good. I accomplished or as much or maybe even more than what I set out to do. So mm-hmm. it's onwards and upwards from there.
Beat the Williamses.
Yeah.
Beat Albon. I know he's been competitive.
I think Albon finished like 11th, but...
Oh.
But he beat Logan Sargeant, who finished 18th. Well, but yeah, yeah, Logan Sargeant's like
I could beat Logan Sargeant.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely, you could. 100%.
At Jen.
At Jen, you could. You're great at Jen. That's crazy. So good first weekend for Danny Rick, I think, is the diagnosis.
What?
I don't know. I'm just diagnosing him with a good first weekend.
Okay, yeah.
And does that mean that it's really, really bad for Yuki then? Or what does it
mean
for
Yuki? No, he's just going to keep puttering along at AlphaTauri. I mean...
There's a little bit of talk that he'll go to... he might go to Aston Martin because Aston Martin will have Honda engines in 2025 and Yuki's Japanese and Honda likes that.
I see. Maybe. I don't know. What, replace...
Well, when homeboy gets too old.
Alonso. Okay.
But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not holding my breath.
Have to just wait and see on that one. Haas is next. Hülkenberg continues to impress. Qualified 10th, but the car just eats the tires in the race. Mm. And so they can't stay where they qualify. So they qualify up there and then back in the race.
Yeah,
Nico and
too
Kevin.
Bad.
But Kevin, they kind of have parallel races where they'll qualify up and then race down. But Kevin can't qualify as high as Nico.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so Nico's just made K-Mag look bad over the course of the season.
Yeah.
And K-Mag has had to kind of come out and be like, yeah, I just can't drive the car like Nico can.
Damn,
And it sucks. And now the talk is like, oh, should Haas replace K-Mag?
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but also like...
With
Why?
Who? With whom?
I mean...
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's like, what's the point? Who
what's
would you replace
point?
Him with? I mean, if there was a young Ferrari driver, like, that would be fun. That would be the target, would be, you know, like, Haas as a young Ferrari development team, like it kind of traditionally is, but I don't know of one that's exciting.
Okay.
There's no Leclerc. Leclerc has a brother, but I don't know that he's in.
Oh, yeah,
good,
Arthur.
You know? Arthur, that's right.
I know.
Arthur.
King Art. Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Artie.
Williams, Alex Albon finished 11th. I wrote it was a low profile week of excellence for Albon, and it was just a low profile week for Sargeant. That's about it.
Logan.
Yeah, he seems to just manage to be like really anonymous, kind of no matter what happens.
Yeah.
I don't remember him doing anything.
I remember him like people passing him.
Well, he's in a Williams. Yeah. So those are the teams.
Yep.
The standings. First place, driver standings, Max Verstappen, of course, 281 points. He already has more points than I think Sebastian Vettel did when he won his first championship. Some stat like that.
Okay.
So he's got lots of points.
He has lots of points. I believe it.
He has 110 more points than second place Sergio Perez. Third place Fernando Alonso, 139 points. Fourth place Lewis, and then George, and then Carlos, and then Charles, and then eighth place Lando, all the way down in
coming
eighth
up. I know, I'm surprised he's so low, but yeah.
Well, it's just like Max gets all the points, and then everybody else just like
get fights for the crumbs.
Yeah, exactly. Max has 281. He just wins every race. Yeah, it's so funny. And then Lance is in ninth place, Esteban Ocon in 10th place, Oscar Piastri 11th place, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Constructors Championship, Red Bull, of course, is far and ahead in first place with 452 points. Then Mercedes. This is where it gets actually interesting because Aston, Ferrari, and McLaren are all kind of equally as good as Mercedes, but Mercedes has a lead in second place. So over the course of the season, they're all kind of converging. Like Aston's getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
Ferrari is kind of holding station with 167 points, like scoring 10 points a race on average, you know. And then McLaren lately is like 30, 28, 27. You know, like getting
right,
these
climbing.
Huge points
yeah.
scores. And then Aston is getting like 6-3, like nothing, you know. So there could be a big flip-flop in the third, fourth, and fifth place teams.
Where are we in the season?
Exactly halfway,
okay.
basically.
Okay.
So we'll have one more race, Spa, then summer break. And then half the season to go.
Oh, my God.
I know. They said they're going to try to go to 24 races. This can be like kind of our news segment of the season of the show where we cap off with some topical
meta discourse.
Yeah. So speaking of what's going on in the world of Formula One, they said. It's not breaking news or anything, but that Stefano Domenicali, who is the Formula One boss, said that 24 races would be the target. And that
how many they do they now?
I think they're doing 21.
Oh
or
my!
Two.
So more?
More, and that would be like logistically the absolute maximum they could do with like the time it would take to travel between the races and
would they have to lengthen
stuff.
The season?
It would be like literally all year long.
Right.
It would be like one
well there's
month
only
of the season.
How many weeks are there in a year? 54?
Exactly
52?
It would be like it would be almost like a break for maybe Ramadan in the summer and a break for Christmas.
Ramadan happens on the spring break, or it does this year.
Oh, okay. So it's like March.
March.
Yeah. So a 10th, a break early in the year, a break late in the year.
I believe. I was just looking at my calendar.
Okay. Interesting. We'll see. Anyway, my phone's ringing. Good time to stop.
Okay.
Any other thoughts?
Anyway,
I gotta go.
Yeah,
gotta get
this. Telemarketer is calling me.
Yeah.
That's too many races. Someone.
Yeah, is that too many races?
Domenicali.
Yeah, does that diminish the brand?
Well, it's just too much. It's like information overload. Like you get like jaded. I don't know. It's just like it becomes like blasé is not as special if it's like, oh, just yet another race. There's plenty to talk about even when there's not racing, I guess. But maybe that's like for the, you know, deeper fans, and they just want the spectacle. They want the like crowds. They want the like ticket sales. Right. They want the broadcasting. Yeah. And so all that, of course, you need more races for. But like I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't mind when like, oh, there's not a race this weekend. There's one next weekend, because there's still, I don't know, things to keep tabs on. You still have like your podcast to listen to and like news to keep track of. And
right. Yeah, I think you're onto something there, because really for me, it has so much to do with just the quality of the product.
Yeah.
And that 24 races is sure is a hell of a lot. And it would feel like probably too many if the product isn't really, really good. And I mean, like,
yeah, if it's just like another dominant season, so you're like, okay.
And not just the racing on track, but if it's like watered down commercially, you know, if
like
it's
how so?
if it's just like crammed down our throat with a lot of like cheesy commercialized bits, you know, like, here's, okay, so I'm a UFC fan, right? This is a little bit of an MMA crossover. Like, the UFC has a contract with ESPN to put on 34 weekends of fights on ESPN a year.
Right, so they just have like randos fight and stuff.
So on the surface, that's like, oh, great, we get 34 weekends of fights. But Dana White, in my opinion, just uses it as like filler, right?
Yeah, but that's a whole different sport. You can't like filler a Formula One race.
I know. But my point is, and it is different, of course, because this is like a one-man show, you know, and he's just like kind of like a
monarch, autocrat,
right? But my point is there can be so many of a thing that the sport gets watered down, and what you're really getting, what's really being created, is a product that's being sold for the peripheral merchandise and commercial benefit, and not a sport.
I mean, it's always been a product, baby.
I know, that's true. But there's been times, give and take, I'm sure, and I'm no historian of Formula One, but where it's been more about the sport and less about, can we sell t-shirts? Can we sell driver images? Can we sell, you know, television shows and movies? And more about, how did the cars sound? What are the performance capabilities of the tires, and like, what are the G forces on the drivers and stuff like that? That's what drives me to the sport. And that's what, like, a lot of people who are, yeah. So without ranting too much about it, how good is the sport? 24 races doesn't have to be too much, but I know that probably the impetus is we're trying to make money. Right.
Yeah.
Which means 24 races probably will be too much, because they're doing it for the wrong reason.
It'll just be hard on the teams.
Oh, yeah, and there's that, too. Like, maybe it's just, like, teams can't afford to do it. And yeah, so. Who knows if it'll ever actually happen. We'll see. All right. Enough from us. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
This has been the Formula Fun Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the race in Hungary. We're on to Belgium Spar next weekend, where it's very dangerous to race.
Uh-oh.
We can talk about that. Someone recently died there. Now everybody's like,
what?
Maybe we shouldn't race at Spa.
Maybe not.
We'll pick that up next time. All right. I'm Matt.
I'm Caitlin.
Over and out. Thanks for listening.
Bye.